Good morning, and welcome to Unifin's first quarter 2019 conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the presentation, we will open the floor for questions. At that time, instructions will be given as to the procedure to follow if you would like to ask a question. It is my pleasure to turn the call over to Mr. David Pernas, Director of Investor Relations and Corporate Finance at Unifin. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone, and thanks for joining us today to discuss Unifin's first quarter 2019 earnings results. This morning, Unifin's senior management team will discuss the company's first quarter 2019 consolidated results per the press release distributed yesterday. If you have not received a copy of the earnings release, please contact the investor relations team to receive a copy. Prior to introducing the management, I would like to remind you that forward-looking statements may be made during this conference call. These do not account for economic circumstances, industry conditions, the company's performance, or financial results. As such, these forward-looking statements are based on several assumptions and factors that could change, causing actual results to materially differ from current expectations. Therefore, we ask you that you refer to the disclaimer located in the earnings release prior to making any investment decision. We are very pleased to introduce today Mr. Sergio Camacho, Chief Executive Officer, and Sergio Cantino, Chief Financial Officer. At this time, I would like to turn over the call to Sergio Camacho for his presentation. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, David. Hi, everybody. Good morning. Thank you for joining us today. While the Mexican economy had a slow start, we saw positive shifts in sentiment and trends as the quarter progressed. This helped us to post solid results, supported by the strength of our business model. Our interest income grew 26.6% compared to the same period of 2018, while the financial margin and net income grew 40.8% and 19.7% respectively. Our total net portfolio increased by 26.1%, thanks to the growth in total originations in the past 12 months. We were able to maintain our funding cost at a healthy 10.1% and our NPL ratio at a stable 3.6%. As the quarter progressed, our performance was helped by the economic backdrop, financial assets rallied, the FX exchange rate appreciated, the Mexican stock exchange rose, and the yields on sovereign bonds declined. Nonetheless, uncertainty over the government economic policies, high interest rates, slowing economic growth, and concerns over Pemex financial situations limited risk appetite. These affect our originations, particularly at the beginning of the quarter, after which we observed a recovery. We expect that the recovery experienced by the end of the quarter continue and helps increase originations during the rest of the year. This is also supported by the company's strategic initiatives and the macroeconomic stability. Moreover, during the coming months, we expect that the NAFTA-2 to be approved, the central bank to maintain rates and hold or even begin to ease monetary policy towards the end of the year, and government spending on social programs and infrastructure projects to take effect. This all should contribute to more stable and stronger economic activity. From October last year, we launched a program that, over the long run, will transform Unifin. We are changing our salespeople from being promoters to advisors, providing our clients with a complete service that will guide them through the process of requesting and receiving a loan. We require new certifications from the Tecnológico de Monterrey to all of our advisors and enhance the transformation of the business model with the development of new technological tools, as well as the creation of new support areas such as our economic studies area. Unifin launched the largest campaign in the company history to date, Receive the Call. This is a mass media advertising campaign with the goal of reaching over 240,000 identified companies and turning them into customers. To support this campaign, we focus on reinforcing one of our key areas, the Client Prospecting Center, which is made up for more than 80 telephone consultants with the goal of reaching the previously mentioned companies. We are confident that Unifin business fundamentals are sufficiently strong for the company to grow revenues steadily and improve levels of profitability. Despite the numerous challenges ahead, we are prepared to make the best of what is to come. We are confident in Mexico promising long-term potential and will continue investing in the country and the development of small and medium business as we have done up to now. We also reaffirm our commitment with the shareholders to continue our efforts to improve the profitability of the company while maintaining a prudent and responsible financial strategy. By any means, we will never jeopardize our financial health to support growth. Regarding Unifin, on March 22, 2009, the company informed that in accordance with the resolutions adopted by the Annual General Ordinary and Extraordinary Shareholders Meeting held on March 21st, it was approved, among other matters, to amend the company bylaws by virtue of the modification of the company regime from a non-regulated multiple-purpose financial company in the form of a publicly traded company, which is a Sociedad Anónima Bursátil de Capital Variable, to a publicly traded corporation, Sociedad Anónima Bursátil de Capital Variable. Consequently, with the previous approvals of its board of directors and the favorable opinion of its Audit and Practices Committee, the company adopted International Financial Reporting Standards issued by the International Accounting Standards Board for the preparation and audit of its financial statements. In terms of the applicable legal provisions, this change in regime and accounting standards will allow the company to achieve greater transparency and comparability in its financial information, considering the nature of its business. So all the numbers and all the numbers you're going to be reading or hearing today are based under these IFRS considerations. Unifin was able to navigate and adapt to a complex economic environment, once again showing the strength of our business model, closing the quarter with a growth in total interest income of 26.6 versus the same period of previous year. The interest expense increased by 25.2% to 1.5 billion pesos due to incremental debt that supported the growth of the company's operation. During the first quarter, the weighted average funding cost was 10.1% compared to 9.9% in the first quarter 2018. It is important to highlight that only two basis points increase in the funding cost was caused by interest rate rise. The remaining 18 bps is related to incremental debt. This figure is very relevant, considering the recent increase in cost of debt, providing the importance of the conservative measures the company took to shield the balance sheet months ago. As a result, the financial margin from the quarter ended at 854 million pesos, an increase of 40.8%. This growth was helped by ongoing repricing of our implicit yields and commissions, a strict analysis of financial cost efficiencies, and profiting from market opportunities. As previously forecasted and in line with our strategy, our financial margin as a percentage of the total income increased to 35.3% compared to 31.8% in the first quarter of 2018. Moreover, the net interest margin for the first quarter improved by 140 bps to 7.6% from 6.2% recorded 1 year ago. One of our strategic initiatives, this transition from promoter to advisor, as well as the investments in our IT platform and the certification of our advisors by El Tecnológico de Monterrey, resulted in an increase in OPEX of 27.6%. Although as a percentage of sales, OPEX remained at a healthy 14.1% versus 13.9% reported in the first quarter of 2018. This investment, paired with the development of the largest campaign in history of Unifin, Receive the Call, will allow us, as previously mentioned, to reach more than 240,000 identified companies. Our operating income for the quarter reached 429 million pesos, a 24.2% growth from the 346 million reported during the same period of last year. Consolidated net income from the quarter grew 19.7% to reach 469 million pesos during the first quarter from 392 million in the first quarter of 2018. As a result of the aforementioned, the total net loan portfolio reached 45.2 billion pesos, an increase of 26.1% compared to the portfolio of 35.9 billion in the first quarter of last year, thanks to the growth in total origination in the past 12 months. NPLs under the new methodology, which basically consists of lease portfolio at 91 days past due and factoring and auto loans NPLs at 31 days past due, ended up at 3.6% in the first quarter. This number does not consider the estimated recovery value of our assets related to such non-performing loans. Our loan loss reserves are based on an expected loss methodology, which consists of provisioning the full amount of factoring auto and other loans NPLs. As to the leasing portfolio, the expected loan loss provision is determined based upon historic payment behavior, the current environment, and a reasonable provision for future payments. The total loan losses reserve is $957 million. According to historical data, the sensitivity analysis for write-offs estimates a break-even value of 40% of their commercial value of the asset before recognizing impairment. Stockholders' equity grew by 14.2%, reaching 9.4 billion pesos at the end of the first quarter. Excluding the mark-to-market, Unifin capitalization ratio was 16.8% at the end of the period. We continue to focus on improving efficient capital allocation and increased share repurchase activity. During the first quarter 2019, we acquired 5.1 million shares via the repurchase program. We believe that share buybacks at the right price is one of the most effective ways to return value to our investors. It is important to highlight that the annual shareholders meeting approved the cancellation of 5 million shares that we previously held in treasury that correspond to the share buyback program. With this cancellation, the earnings per share for the quarter stood at 5.32 pesos, showing our commitment to our equity holders. Now, I would like to address the main change and impact in our book value given by the adoption of IFRS. It is important to highlight that any conversion effects as a consequence of adopting IFRS must be allocated in the equity, specifically on the return earnings. The nominal effect on book value given such adjustments was 2.5 billion pesos. Consequently, the main variations subject to the aforementioned change are, first, revenues and interest recognition. There was 1.8 billion pesos due to the changes in the amortization tables of our lease contracts and the deferral of other income. Loan loss provision. We created an additional 300 million pesos in loan loss provisions for a total amount of 957 million to date. This additional provision created is explained by an adjustment on the methodology for provisioning the NPL, as we currently base the allowance on an expected loss basis. Under the share repurchase program, we have an effect of 300 million due to our continuous plan on share repurchases, the company provision consequently. The total net portfolio under IFRS represents the net present value of the total leasing portfolio plus the outstanding balance of factoring and auto loans. While MexGAAP includes factoring, auto loans, and other accounts receivable and memorandum accounts composed of principal plus accrued interest. Fixed assets under IFRS account only our own assets, while under MexGAAP we register the total fixed assets under operating lease plus own assets. Finally, some adjustments have to be made to revenues. IFRS revenues consider the interest income of our treasury business line, as well as the commissions, while MexGAAP consider operating lease income, interest income from the factoring and all loans, and other lease benefits, mainly generated from asset sales at the end of each leasing contract. Overall, the change from MexGAAP to IFRS supports make the market greater transparency with respect to the company results, driven by the disclosure of additional financial information. Moreover, reporting results in IFRS provides more comparable information with our peers in the financial sector that use the same accounting methodology. By adopting these international standards, we look to provide better, clearer, and more transparent information to the market, to our investors, and our bondholders. With that, I would like to end up and open the floor to Q&A.
Thank you. We will now be conducting a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment, please, while we poll for questions. Thank you. Our first question comes from the line of Carlos Rivera with Barclays. Please proceed with your question.
Hi. Good morning, everyone. My first question is regarding asset quality. Looking at the NPL ratio under IFRS, My understanding was that by considering the value of the collateral, the NPL level was going to be lower than the 3.6 that was reported. Of course, higher than the 1% in the prior methodology, but a little bit lower than this level, because it's even higher than the adjusted NPL ratio that you used to disclose. So I'm just wondering if you could comment a little bit here, and if you were also surprised a bit by the 3.6 level. And related to these, coverage, despite additional provisions, is below 100%, at 58%. Is this a level that you feel comfortable with? Do you have any plans to increase that to 100%? I understand the strong framework for recovering collateral and all that, but if you could comment on that, that would be very helpful. And my second question will be related to the financial reserve line, but I'll wait on that one. Thanks.
Hi, Carlos. No, we were not surprised. Actually, if you see the 3.6% that we're presenting right now, it's in line with the previous number that we present based on the total amount of the lease contract. If you go on page 9 of our press release, we're presenting there an aging on balances for the different businesses. This number, this 3.6%, does not consider the recovery value of the asset. So when you see on that aging balances and see within the different businesses and see particularly in the case on the leasing business, you can see that the only way that we will need to record a loss or a potential write-off or charge-off, depending how do you want to mention that, will be if we sell all of our assets related to those non-performing leases below 40%. So if, on a strict way, we are over provision in that sense.
And just to add a little more context, Carlos, first, if you compare, let me put it a little bit in context from historical information. As you recall, we posted a 3.1% NPL back in the full year 2018 results. Okay, the change here is that under MexGAP, the comparison between the NPL, the adjusted NPL at that time, was that you would take the full outstanding amount of the lease contract, no, of the NPL contract to the lease contract, no, or to the lease portfolio altogether, no. The change here is that the previous portfolio consisted on the nominal amount of the complete rentals to maturity. Today we're only considering the principal amount or the net present value of the account. So what you would expect is for the percentage to increase nonetheless, even though that it's the same non-performing accounts that that we had from before, or the same metric or controlled metric that we had before. No, so remember that before you used to have a nominal amount, and today it's only the net present value.
Okay, I see a denominator effect there.
That's correct. There's the denominator effect. And additionally to that, and just to finalize the comment on the non-performing loans, no. You take the full outstanding amount of the NPL, okay, and you provision only what's left between the break-even value before any impairment, okay, and that's why you get to provision the rest. You don't get to subtract under the methodology. You don't get to subtract that break-even value to the non-performing loan account. You subtract it from specifically the provision, no. And that's for leasing. And for factoring and auto loans, it's basically provisioning the full amount. No?
Okay, regarding the coverage, you feel comfortable at 58?
We do feel comfortable at 58 because it's 58 plus the break-even value before any potential write-offs, no?
Okay.
Historically, the company has sold its repossessed assets at approximately 80% of the commercial value. So if you consider that history, we are
we're over collateralized in that sense. No, remember that book value vis-a-vis commercial value of the asset is considerably lower. So in any repossession case, no, the company, it's not the same, it's not the same yield or the same margin you would trust to charge throughout the life of a performing lease, no? But if you get to repossess and sell it back, since the secondary market of the asset is higher than the book value, you typically still receive a gain, and that's why we put out the break-even value as of the first quarter, which is 40% of its value.
Okay. Thanks for that. And on the financial results line, my second question. So that is going to be now an important line on your P&L. What part flows to the P&L? What flows to the equity? I mean, the mark-to-market in the equity this quarter was negative, but you still reflected some positive on the P&L. So you can give us more color on how to think about this. I mean, these are some memories about the time of the IPO when the financial income line was pretty strong and caused a lot of volatility on the results. How should we think about this? Thanks.
Of course. Now, I think we need to clarify a little further, because this is not this income or loss on the P&L is not related to the hedging of our debt. So we still have full hedging considerations on the balance sheet. Okay, the effect that you see there is for some debt that we withdrew or that we took upon from some financing lines that was not hedged within the quarter. Okay, that via the revalorization of that account in the cash and equivalents, no, and in the P&L, offset the result. The rest of the debt of the company, okay, is completely hedged. And in addition to that, I also have to say that the cash and equivalents account from the withdrawal of the debt also had a valuation. Also, typically you wouldn't expect this account to be substantial or large, as we try to hedge all of the debt entirely. It was just a momentary effect because of the withdrawal of that particular line of credit.
Okay, so going forward and on a more medium term basis, that should be coming towards zero or an amount.
That is correct. It's never going to be a material impact on the P&L. No.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, guys.
Our next question comes from a line of Alonso Garcia with Credit Suisse. Please proceed with your question.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for taking my question. My first question is regarding the pressure that we observed in OPEX growth, mainly because of the initiative that you are taking to transform the company. I just want to know if you could provide some guidance in terms of, the expense growth this year and for how long you expect expense growth to be pressured by this initiative. That would be my first question. And my second question is regarding the outlook for margins, considering now this new accounting. What do you expect? How do you expect margins to evolve going forward? Thank you.
Sure. Can you repeat the first question, please, Alonso?
Sure. The first question is on OPEX growth. I mean, if you could provide some guidance on the kind of OPEX growth that you are expecting for this year, considering the initiatives that you are investing on, and for how long you expect OPEX to be pressured by this initiative. Thank you.
Of course. No. As to administrative expenses and OPEX, no, I think it's going to be controlled over the year. Of course, the metric itself changes because of the accounting, no? Beforehand, you used to have, in the revenue side, you used to have principal and interest from the leasing receivables, and now you only get to recognize the interest, making the denominator smaller, no? That's why the main change in the metric specifically when we pass from 6% to 14% this quarter. Additionally to that, of course, as in the natural course of business, the company's strategy in terms of expanding the staff to support the company's operations, the launching of the campaign and the opening of regional offices, and investment in software IT to support the operations and so on, have made these operating expenses increase, no? But we think that throughout the rest of the year, things are going to be steadily behaving as a trend. No, we don't expect necessarily further deterioration on the metric specific. No.
And as a matter of fact, I mean, I can anticipate that by the end of the quarter, we're going to see a lower OPEX as a percentage of revenues. Now, getting into the margins, and based on what we established about 3 quarters ago, in which we set up with you guys a plan for improving our profitability, we continue to do that. Now, talking about under IFRS, we see a trend on a financial margin that is going up from a 33.7% that we posted in the third quarter of 2018 to a 34.3% posted in the fourth quarter, and now presenting a 35.3% this quarter. So we continue with that trend. That's part of our main strategies to improve profitability, and that, of course, it's within our compensation and everything internally. And also, so what the point here is that we continue with that goal to improve profitability quarter over quarter.
Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from the line of Nicolas Riva with Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Please proceed with your question.
Yeah, thanks very much, Sergio and David, for taking my questions. My first question is on growth. I believe that at the last earnings call, you had mentioned that you are guiding for growth in your leasing portfolio, total portfolio, 15 to 20%. We saw much stronger growth than that in the first quarter, 26% year on year. And I believe that the last earnings call, you had said that you were seeing some kinds of a wait-and-see mode given the outlook for Mexico. If you can provide an updated guidance for the growth of your leasing portfolio this year, that's my first question. And second question on funding. I remember you had said that you needed probably about $1 billion in new funds this year. That was assuming, I think, 15% growth of your leasing portfolio, and that you had secured about $400 million so far. If you can give us your thoughts in terms of potential issuance for the second half of the year and your funding needs. Thanks.
Sure. Thank you for the question. First of all, in terms of the growth of the portfolio, we continue with the same guidance. That if you see the second half of the year, usually is a stronger one. So the comparisons are going to be tougher once that we approach the second half of the year. Therefore, we continue with the same prudence in means of the previous forecast that we provide. Of course, whatever that we can achieve in excess to, it's going to be taken. In terms of the funding, the same as we continue with the same expectations for growth, that the funding needs are remain the same. And yes, we have already secured $400 million. If we see the markets on bonds right now, we see that there's more, let's say, windows for opportunity for doing something. Of course, we are not anticipating to do something in the early future. We need to see the markets. We also need to see the yields of our current bonds outstanding there. Because once again, we're here for the long run and we're not going to jeopardize or affect our existing bondholders for issuing something that we are not in the need to. However, if we continue to see these windows of opportunity, that's something that is going to be under discussion internally.
Okay, thanks, Sergio. One follow-up. So your guidance of 15 to 20% growth for the portfolio stands. It wasn't changed this year.
Yes, it stands. Okay, thanks. On a standalone, yes, it stands.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Jason Mollin with Scotiabank. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, thank you very much. My question is also on growth and the expectation. So the sequential growth, the origination slowed down, and we did see, if you were just responding to the last question, we saw 26% growth in the portfolio year on year, but there was the restatement that you referred to under IFRS. I guess it's the net present value, the value of the leases, historically was lower, and that's one explanation why the growth rate looks higher at 26. Is that analysis correct, or is it just as you were suggesting that the second half comps are much harder or is really the growth rate 26% the right way to think about your business going forward, or should we be looking at origination? And maybe as a follow-up, you can give us an update under the new accounting of the expected pipeline and the conversion. Thank you.
Sure. I mean, there's definitely cyclicality playing along in the numbers, Jason. As you remember, the first quarter and basically the first half of every year is typically slower than the second half. This year is not the exception, and in addition to that, we have atypical circumstances under the economic outlook and under political environment that definitely changed the sentiment and basically the conversion on the pipeline of our clients. No, there was a very slow start on January. No, typically coming from the fact that basically people are the decision makers of the targets that we have within the clients are away on holidays. No, and they get back basically by the second half of January. Then we had a slow run, definitely because of perception throughout February, and we identified a better performance on March, driven by better perception, driven by more stability on how the sentiment was, and that we also managed to convert a little bit more of what was left behind from January and February, no? So that's one thing. Coming the second quarter, no, we are definitely starting on a complicated month because here in Mexico, as you recall, we have Holy Week and then Easter, and these two weeks are for business purposes they're slow, but we are expecting a very good close of April, no, and then the coming months, May and June, look promising, no? The second half of the year is always, and has always been from a historical perspective, way more positive, but it also makes the comps look tougher, because the second half of last year was particularly strong in the third quarter, and then we also had a strong close of the year, no? Overall, the pipeline of the company remains very solid. There's a lot of interested parties. Via this new launching of the campaign, we have been able to identify more and more demand coming into the backlog of the company specifically. If the sentiment plays along and people decide to continue doing operations, we think we're in line with the original budget of 15 to 20%. And just to complement a little bit from the previous question, no, the $650 million that we said new cash was required for this year was on a stretch of the 20 plus percent growth. No, if things in the second quarter don't play along as positive as we expected, the second $150 million will probably come down a little bit, no?
So just to clarify some of the points you made, so I'm looking at my notes from last quarter, and one of the prior comments was, I think you were talking about 20%, but growth for the portfolio. Now you're talking about 15 to 20, and this is off of the new base, the new lower base that we have under IFRS for the end of 2018, correct?
I mean, really, under comparable numbers, no? Whether it's IFRS or nominal, the expectation on growth year over year remains the same, no? Because the base also gets...
Is that 15 to 20, or is it 20, or is it this range?
We always try to keep ranges, no, because we are not necessarily, the SME sector is not necessarily precise on the underwriting, but 20% is a fair assessment.
Great. So that's helpful. Thank you very much.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Our next question comes from the line of Nick Dimitroff with Morgan Stanley. Please proceed with your question.
Hi there. Thank you for the call, by the way. I have a quick question regarding capital. I noticed that the adoption of IFRS reduced your capital by about 20%. And the ratio that I normally look at is equity to assets, and I also subtract the perpetuals. So if I look at that ratio currently, after the adoption of IFRS, it's 7.9%. And I kind of remember that, you know, last time we discussed this, you did mention that if that ratio dips below 11%, then you're going to probably consider raising capital. Now, granted that in this case, the big driver behind the deterioration in this ratio is really an accounting change, I was wondering whether you could give us some sensitivity regarding, you know, how you want to handle capital going forward. When I look at the breakdown of your capital, the hybrid really accounts for about a third of your capital. So it is a very kind of substantial part of it. Any color on that front would be appreciated. Thank you.
Of course, Nick. Definitely the low teens number in which we start considering equity, additional equity infusion for the company is under a different analysis, no? It's just plain vanilla equity to assets. For us, definitely the change in accounting and the effects on the book value or on the shareholders' equity that we described before are a constant of adopting IFRS, and it's a natural effect. It doesn't necessarily mean that there's a deterioration on the equity. For us, on a comparable analysis, it remains with of course considering the growth of the company, things remain relatively constant. No, today we think that the equity is still on an adequate position. No, we are currently reviewing the projections for the rest of the year, but today we don't anticipate the need of additional equity in the next 2 years like we have been mentioning before, no?
Remember, Nick, that everything that we have said on the plan of improving profitability is going to support a lower rate of deterioration on the capitalization ratio because of the growth.
Huh? Okay, so organic capital generation should more or less offset the growth in asset growth and the rest, and we should start seeing these. Is it fair to assume that this is when the ratios are plateauing, and you know we should probably start seeing some improvement in the coming quarters?
Yes. Yeah. Actually, this is the lower point. In this, we have the initial effects on the adoption of IFRS plus the dividend payment. So yes, I mean you have this effect on this quarter that of course should start to recover as long as we go through the year.
Got it. And one quick question on factoring. I did notice that the asset quality kind of deteriorated there. I think your NPLs went up to 5% from less than 1% a year ago. Is there something going on there, or it's kind of the adoption of IFRS has an impact there as well?
Hi, Nick. No, not at all. I believe we did this statement on the previous call, but if not, we'll make it now. We did have one particular exposure in the NPL account of factoring, no, and it's been playing along, and it continues to be a non-performing account today, and that's basically the case.
This is the same account. Got it. Okay. Thank you, guys.
Exact same account, and it's reserved the whole amount, no.
The whole month. Excellent. Thank you.
Our next question comes from line of Nicholas Brando with Newfoundland. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, everyone. It's Luis Adaimi here. Hi, Sergio. Hi, David. I have two questions. One on the share repurchase program. First of all, congratulations on the initiative and on being aggressive as a sign of, you know, how much value you see on the shares. You purchased 5 million, you canceled in the same quarter. Is that the strategy going forward, in order to boost EPS, or are you going to analyze the cancellation of the shares on an annual basis? That's my first question.
The best practices say that you need to analyze that on an annual basis, because you need an annual shareholders to approve that cancellation. However, as you can see, that we continue buying shares on the market, and we will continue doing so at the levels that we are trading right now. So in that event, I do not will say no to another cancellation of shares. However, being very conservative, that will be addressed next year, early next year.
Okay. And is there, that's still part of that repurchase fund that you have that allows you to trade around the shares to promote liquidity, or is it just a straight repurchase program?
It is. I mean, it's the same fund. However, we haven't sold any share to the market just because of valuations. We have the market maker. We hire UBS as market maker early this year to provide more liquidity to the share. And our efforts have been now focused on acquiring shares.
Perfect. And another question on your funding costs. You know, 10-year rates have dropped actually quite dramatically from the peak in the Mexican 10-year rates in November. And I believe the perspective from talking to economists, I'm sure you'll agree, or I don't know if you agree, but is of easing earlier than initially thought, you know, more maybe towards the middle of the year, given lower than expected growth and inflation. How do you view that, and when do you think we, you know, you're going to start seeing or you're going to start benefiting from lower cost of capital in that sense?
Yeah, I mean, we are tracking that, I will say, on a weekly basis. Our financial advisors, the bankers, are tracking that on a daily basis, no, pushing us to deeper analyze. However, we want to be very careful, as I said, on the curve for our existing bondholders. And second, because we need to go in line with the origination pace that we're seeing right now. As we have said through the call, we saw a recovery in March. We are expecting to have a good quarter this quarter, the second quarter, because we're seeing some more dynamism in the decision-making process. And that, coupled with our strategies, all these advertising campaigns should enhance the results of the quarter. However, as we said, we have already secured 400 million already, so that allows us to continue being efficient in our carry, and our not to have a negative carry with the debt. But yes, we are tracking that on a weekly basis, and of course we are aware that the spreads have tightened, and that the yields are now on a more attractive level than were perhaps 1 month ago.
And one final one, if I may. The accounting change you mentioned, you know, the benefit in terms of maybe more transparency reflecting on improved cost of capital. And you know, the fact that you change your accounting structure, does that reflect in any sort of extra requirements in capitalization or in provisioning, or is it just you know, another form of reporting your results?
It is another form of reporting. I think it's more transparent. Now you can see very, very well, for example, the case of our NPLs, what are the aging of the balance, the creation of incremental reserves. Of course, those are measures that are more on a transparent way, but also more conservative towards the market. All of this, of course, it's an accounting thing, and we are not anticipating any financial need for adopting the IFRS.
Terrific. Many thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from a line of Pedro Fabregat with Compass Group. Please proceed with your question.
Thank you. My question has been answered.
Okay. Our next question comes from a line of Chelsea Colon with Adrian Asset Management. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, and thank you for the call. I have a couple of questions. The first is a follow-up on the funding. You mentioned $400 million has already been secured, but can you provide us more color around how much of that is refinancing versus new debt out of the $650 million or so that of new funding you may need for this year? And then can you also update us on the progress in refinancing your local securitization? That's on the funding. And then my second question, I was wondering if you've had any more discussions with the new administration with regard to improving financial inclusion. I was thinking that maybe this administration could actually be beneficial to you from a growth standpoint. So any update there would be helpful as well.
Hi, Chelsea. As to the first question, and to put a little bit more disclosure on the financing requirements, yes, we have secured around $400 million of the original budget. I would say it's all new cash, no, because we haven't done any refinancings of the debt just yet, no. But partly, a portion of that new cash has come in the shape or in the means of a private securitization deal, which accounts for around $125 million. The rest has come basically from the withdrawal of facilities that we have been provided from both commercial banks here locally in Mexico and some investment banks that have put some skin in the game also with the company, no? I would say that additionally to that, we continue analyzing the possibility of issuing in the local markets a securitization. We're continuously monitoring the possibility of addressing the market and analyzing the potential appetite for pension funds and so on. And we're continuing to expand the basically the proposals and the term sheets that we have been receiving from different interested parties for additional debt, no? And we still need to do the refinancing of the securitizations, no?
Regarding the new administration, we continue to see them as a very friendly to our business, in the sense of the support to the SME sector, coupled with being a Mexican entity and have a very clean history. The talks with them in terms for additional or incremental support in the means of funding continue, and we may expect to have finalized something by the end of the second quarter of this quarter.
And Chelsea, just one more thing. Remember that the company has always tried to be somewhat proactive in the approach of meeting new financing requirements. And depending on the outlook in the medium term, I would say no. That's why we continue analyzing different alternatives and opportunities. No, in that case, the company will remain or we continue with exploring additional plans, but the budget specifically has remained. No, so it would be sort of like a cash neutral additional withdrawals and so on. No, within the same budget that we have described of the 650.
So based on the fact that you're saying $400 million is all new money, should I infer that you only need $250 million more? Or given money is fungible, obviously, should I assume that some of that $400 million will end up refinancing some maturities that you have this year? So your additional
you assume correctly. No, the $400 is definitely new debt, but it can be played out to do some refinancings on the short-term debt. If you see, actually, the short-term debt increase throughout the year on an important way, no? So maybe we still require additional debt to refinance that short-term financings, no? And in addition to that, we also continue carrying out the analysis for the refinancing of additional securitizations locally.
And is the private securitization you mentioned, the $125 million, is that categorized within bank debt in your your financial liability page?
No. No, no, no. We put it in the in the securitizations. No, it's also a non-recourse. It's basically the same type of structure that we have in the public markets, but it's basically just allocated with one player and they take the entire deal.
Okay, got it. And then finally, have you disclosed what you have available in committed credit facilities, Bill?
Yes, we don't have necessarily committed credit facilities. To be fair, I think we have like $100 million in committed credit facilities today. Because of the high cost of having committed facilities here in Mexico, no? But I can tell you that we have outstanding capabilities from additional banks in an amount today close to additional $200 million. But like we've said before in tete-a-tete meetings or even publicly, no, I have in my desk around $600 million of additional term sheets that we've been presented by banks. No?
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
A final reminder, if you would like to ask a question, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Our next question comes from the line of Enrique Mendoza with Actinver. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good morning to all. Thank you for taking my question. Considering the accounting changes, are you now able to provide some guidance for profit growth for the year? And if I may, another question, do you expect the leasing yield to improve significantly from current levels?
The company will continue with the same guidance policy that we have maintained through time. I think that the guidance today is the same that we have provided in the previous calls, which is basically growing our asset base between 15-20%, no, and that remains the same, no. As to the guidance of a punctual figure on the net interest margin, we don't have any, no? But we have disclosed that the company is expecting for the year-end results to have some important profitability enhancement on the margin side, and we continue with that same outlook.
Okay. If I am understanding, the what you're trying to do is to target an improvement in the interest margin rather than barely focusing in improving the leasing yield. Am I right?
I mean, yes. One is a consequence of the other, but yes, the outlook today is more focusing on the margin than rather one implicit yield of a business line, no?
Sure. And having said that, are you expecting the interest rate, the short-term interest rate in Mexico to going down in next quarter?
If there's anything, I think it's likely to happen by the year end. And we have our internal economical advisors here in the company, and the expectation on rates is to either remain stable or maybe decline by at the most 50 basis points towards the year end. To be fair, we have never considered that in the potential expansion of the margin, no. We're continuing with the repricing. We're continuing with the efforts because we are not entirely reliant on only the reference rates. We're also reliant on new issue concessions and new funding and so on, no? So depending on the curve, the interest expense of the company will either remain stable or even increase a little bit, depending on how the market is playing along.
Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you very much.
Our next question is a follow-up question from Chelsea Colon with Aegon Asset Management. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, I just was wondering how, if at all, this accounting change impacts your clients, because I thought under the other methodology, they benefited from greater tax deductibility of their rental expense. So I'm just wondering if this impacts them at all and if you're seeing any effect on demand.
Thank you for the question. It's actually an excellent question. I don't think we haven't said it before throughout the call. It's important to highlight that even though we have an accounting change, it doesn't change anything from a legal standpoint and from a from a fiscal standpoint to the company, to Unifin. Okay, there's no changes there. Now, as to the environment and the clients, IFRS 16 does make the companies put in additional leverage. You show the contract as a liability, no? We don't anticipate. We have done analysis on this front, and we don't anticipate any complications on the demand side, because first we did know upfront what the companies that were basically having operating lease or how they were levered because of the credit bureaus that we review on the operations, no? But additionally to that, the SME market in Mexico is significantly underlevered because of the whole outlook of the market and the very low penetration there is of financial services to the market. So I don't think it's going to complicate things. From a fiscal standpoint and from a legal standpoint, nothing changes at all to the clients either, no? So the company does not expect any significant changes on the demand side.
Got it. Thank you.
We have no further questions at this time. I would now like to turn the floor back over to management for closing comments.
Thank you for the call. Thank you for the questions. For any follow-up, please feel free to contact us at any time, and we'll be more than happy to further continue with any discussions.
Ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude today's teleconference. You may disconnect your lines at this time. Thank you for your participation, and have a wonderful day.